You are listening to the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast.
Yeah, baby!
To another episode of the Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are now on episode 132, slowly creeping along to that 150.
Yeah.
Joining me tonight is Brian the Boy Wonder. Hey, Brian.
That's a new one. I haven't heard that one yet, surprisingly.
And how's it going? Good. And of course, we have our glorious grumpy Taser. Taser, how's it going?
I feel like crap.
Yeah, you sound kind of crappy there, bro. What you got?
I'm old and I'm late dead.
Night flow and hookers, Taser. You can't do that anymore, okay?
Look, I don't have the life of silent.
Do you need an Alka-Seltzer?
So, I you know what I need? I need a bicarbonate, bicuspid.
What?
One of them old.
He's still drunk, ladies and gentlemen. He's still completely bombed right now.
I need something sold by some shyster guy who came out of Chattanooga, promising the Wonder Drug. Like in the old funny cartoons.
Nice.
This is going to be a fun show. Listen to this guy ramble.
And, of course, I am Arnold, your new host. If you listened last week, you know that Ben is no longer with us. Not dead. I'm sorry. That's a bad
term.
That was a terrible term to use now that I realize. That was horrible. Just killing him off. No. He can no longer do the show for personal reasons. We will be chatting with him here and there. But for now, I will be your host. Hopefully he can join us every now and then for a special edition or come back completely. We will keep you updated on anything that we hear from him in the future.
I'm going to be severely messed up and say this. Because Arnold's the gay character, he should make an excellent host. I'm just saying.
Very nice. Stereotypes! Yay!
I'm evil.
Yes, you are. That's why we love you, though. That's why we love you. We're going to go over to Brian with our news of the week. Brian, take
it into it, aren't we?
Yeah, we are right into it.
Okay, folks. A lot of news coming up. I guess we'll start off where we have the least amount and work our way upwards, leading to the grand finale. But starting off rather minimally, we have some news coming out of the Captain America sequel, The Winter Soldier. Recent casting news has surfaced that I don't know if you guys watch much of the soapy shows that are on TV nowadays, but there's one called Revenge over on ABC, I believe. And, it's terrible. Because it's I'm sorry, but it is. Anyway, but the main character of that show is played by a very beautiful young actress named Emily Van Camp. Now, Emily Van Camp is currently the rumored person to be landing the lead female role in Captain America 2, presumably that role being Agent Sharon Carter, the distant relative of Peggy Carter, who was in Captain America the First Avenger, and who later becomes Steve's present-day love interest. And that's where we find ourselves right now with that. So I guess, what do you guys think?
They need to change the relationship, because if it just becomes, well, he gets frozen missing, Peggy wakes up and he's doing Sharon, and she's like, granddaughter. That's just wrong. Don't get me wrong. I know it fits, and I know it's part of the Captain America, whatever.
As many females I know can attest, and some guys maybe, Chris Evans is a, among many things, a super stud. From what I can tell. And a guy like that is going to land all the ass he possibly can. Whatever he wants.
Then he should be tapping Black Widow. I'm just saying.
Well, I think Hawkeye's got dibs on that. So.
Maybe so. But I'm just saying, think about it. If anything, I see that relationship between Cap and Sharon, that's going to be very weird, because something tells, well, Cap's going to be acting like, again, the man out of time, and he's going to be the gentleman out of time. Yeah. And she's probably, they're probably going to play her, she's going to like him, and she's going to, you know, make her, try to make herself as available as possible, you know, because she's a modern day woman. And he's, I'm just guessing, he's not going to be too straight with that, because on top of him being, you know, the proper old gentleman that he is, he's also related to Peggy in some way. So it's just, there's going to be a whole lot of weirdness, you know, that we'll likely see in that movie. I see that happening. And unfortunately, I'm not looking forward to that, because awkward relationships suck.
Yeah, you know they're going to play it. You know they're going to bring it up. They're going to play it out, because you can't not bring it up.
That. Look, if I don't want that.
You're so angry. But Taser, you know, of course it's going to be awkward. First of all, Steve himself, he's probably the biggest virgin to ever virgin, ever. Like, he is just, I don't think he was even laid once in his entire time as Cap, which is bullshit, because he has groupies. I know he does. He's got a head group.
Yeah.
So, you know, of course he's going to be a little green around the girls or whatever, but you have to understand, yeah, that's a little weird, and... You know, I feel like I was making a point with this, but I can't remember where it was going.
Derail!
Fell off the train. You rethink that, and you let me know where you land.
Let me
do not watch, what is this, Revenge? It's on ABC Family, if I'm not mistaken, correct? I do know what channel it's on. I just don't watch it. I don't know this girl. Her face looks familiar, though. Does anybody offhand remember anything that she's been?
Emily Van Camp?
My roommate told me she was in Everwood. She's got a very familiar face.
Some of her credits listed here are Everwood and Brothers and Sisters. So.
I know that's another one I didn't watch either. But she's a very pretty girl, I will say that. At this rate, though, just about any female that gets announced being involved with the Captain America movie, we almost automatically go to Sharon Carter.
Let's face it, the only real women in Captain Universe are either Sharon Carter, his love interest, and Sin, the Red Skull's kid. And
right.
Think
we'll
be
pull out a whole other slew of characters. Pull out from S.H.I.E.L.D.'s group of enemies for that. I mean, isn't there Viper and those kind of people that you can have and still be involved with Cap?
He didn't really interact with Viper.
No?
Much. Viper, I think, was really more along the lines of... you saw an X-Men, you know, with Silver Samurai and...
Okay. I'm honest, I'm not the biggest Cap expert, so I'm just going off of current generations of what I read and stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I guess maybe seeing them involved with the Avengers sometimes. You make that leap. Did you get your train of thought back there, buddy?
Kind of. I am vaguely aware that in... the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I do know that Peggy is, in fact, still alive.
Okay.
So, adds to the awkward factor little bit, I think. But I guess the point I was trying to come around to, and this is still a work in progress, so stay with me here, is that Cap is going to be awkward no matter what you throw at him. At least when it comes to his personal life, because like you said, he is the man out of time, and he's also a huge virgin, and he doesn't know what he's doing. He can barely, I don't think he's even figured out iPods yet, I don't know. He barely gets movie references from like 60 years ago. So no matter what you do, the character is always going to be played off as awkward because he doesn't know what the fuck he is doing, in a sense that is just who he is at the moment. They'll probably bring him up to speed, I hope, maybe. You know, get him a little further along. Like, they did, like the transition in the Ultimate Universe, which is pretty much what they're basing this whole cinematic universe off of, was fairly seamless. There was a few references here or there, a few missed points where, you know, Cap was like, oh, well, golly gee, what's this? And, you know, he gets an apartment in, like, I think it was, like, the Bronx or something, and he's like, I lived here when it was in the 40s, I live here now, and it gets broken into and shit. And so, you know, there's going to be some generation gap, for lack of a better word, but no, you know, Cap needs a lady. He needs a lady.
No, he doesn't. He really doesn't. No, he doesn't.
Sure, he does.
Captain America, like Tony Stark, does not need a woman.
And yet, Tony Stark has one.
He has different women.
Exactly.
Over he has different period of time.
Women. He does not have a woman.
Relationship now. Come on. He's playing it straight for the most part, I'm sure.
Oh, okay. That's recent development. Classically, Iron Man has never really been tagged to any single woman. And look at Cap. We had problems trying to, you know, name women who could be tagged to Cap. You know? The Sharon Carter thing, something that Marvel picked back up after, like, what? Maybe a 25, 30-year absence? Because she was dead.
Right.
You know? And they, I think for most of the 90s, they did, they were trying to pair him with Diamondback. I forgot about that.
But, holy shit.
Yeah, Diamondback. Wow. That Diamondback went and went straight, and it was Captain America and Diamondback. I kid you not, because those are actually some fun books. But Cap, I don't think, ever actually tapped it. You know. But anyway, besides the point, Cap isn't one of those guys that has, like, that classic, you know, love. It's not him. Yeah, you have somebody that you can point to now and say, yeah, her, because they brought her back. But, yeah, he's not like Superman. He's not like Spider-Man. You know, there's not that one chick. You know, that one chick.
Fair enough. That is true. I'm not going to argue with you on that point. I mean, you would know better.
I would just like to say this. If Peggy is still alive, I can't wait to find out, you know, that one scene when, oh, and Cap, here's my grandniece. Please make him happy.
God, I hope Cap not. That smile. Would just be weird.
The introduction, totally awkward. But on that note, I think we'll wrap it up on that. Let's go to the next bit of news.
Okay. Transitioning from minor news to yet more minor news, we have a bit more coming off of the front of X-Men Days of Future Past. We have confirmation of when the movie will be taking place. The movie will be set in 1973, about a decade or so after the original movie takes place. And so obviously a lot will happen in that time. And also we have news that Sentinels will likely be showing up in the story. They're a big feature, so that'll be nice to see. And hopefully they're done right this time and not like they were in fucking X-Men The Last Stand.
Or serious. That hot tease of a fucking Sentinel appearance. Bullshit.
Yeah, that really did annoy me.
How do you take one of the main symbols of mutant oppression and just relegate that to a cameo? I mean, Stryker didn't even use those things, for God's sakes.
Simple. Because they didn't want to spend the money on the special effect.
Well, apparently now they're going to spend the money on special effects.
Damn right.
Woohoo!
I'm excited, man. Which is hopefully we get Bolivar Trask out of the deal. Because, I mean,
it's Sentinels.
I really hope that that's the route that we're going.
Yeah.
I'm down for it. But I want to see giant silver and purple or purple and blue Sentinel shooting beams out of the palm of his hand. It better happen.
Yeah, but you know, I got to be honest, while I'll be happy if we finally get Sentinels, I wanted it to be an X-Men, not X-Men First Class. You know?
Fair enough.
Kind of. Okay, I'm getting what I've been looking forward to, but I'm not getting it the way I wanted it. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't be surprised, you know, though, if we see the Sentinels taking place more when they jump ahead into the future than when the Sentinels being built in the 70s when the First Class story takes place.
Hell, that's true.
I wouldn't be surprised if somehow they go into the future, they see all these Sentinels, somebody else from the government side also sees said Sentinels and ends up back in the past with them and starts creating them there. Watch them do some shit like that.
That's probably where we'll see Wolverine too. He'll probably be in the future.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely.
He's supposed to be in it again. So most likely that's where they'll run into him. Well, I'll get, if I get to have my Wolverine attacking a Sentinel, I'll be happy.
Yep.
I'm gonna say it right now. I will be shit fuck happy, but you know, kind of still disappointed that he's in this movie too. You know, but whatever.
He's gonna be in all of them. You might as well accept it now that you're not gonna have a Marvel X flick without Wolverine having a presence in some fashion.
Hugh Jackman is like just. He's their guy. That's all it is.
Yeah.
He probably plays golf with the Marvel execs on the weekends and shit, and then sings them Broadway musical numbers.
See, but that goes to tell you, they're trying to make him as close to Wolverine as possible by putting him in every damn thing.
Well, that's good, because honestly, he is the best Wolverine I think we'll ever get. I mean, at least for the time being.
It's true.
Yes. Yeah. Well, if you want to go really technical about it, we could argue here for a little while about that. But
no, I'm just saying he's the only one we've ever had.
Okay, fine. I guess for my part on this matter, what I picture is, I don't know if you guys do you guys remember when X-Men Origins Wolverine the video game dropped? They had the uncaged edition.
Yeah.
And you saw glimpses of the future in that. I picture something like that being put in front of us as far as the leap in time goes. And maybe something even akin to the level where you enter Bolivar Trask's laboratory and you literally see the Sentinel being built and launched and shit. And that
Ooh, conveyor belts! Conveyor belts!
Conveyor belts?
Conveyor belts! You know, arms and how being attached.
Would it be to see, especially, just you see this one Sentinel just lifting off like a rocket ship or something.
Nice!
That would be sweet.
Nice!
I would pay to see that.
If we get that, we might get to see Master Mold.
Yeah, you think so?
It may not be, you know, a big Sentinel, but we may get to see what is supposed to be, you know, the Marvel.
The Master Mold. Maybe yeah, just the, like the chest the up instead of like yeah. the whole standing thing, just from the chest right. up.
Exactly.
Well, if we do get to jump in the future, maybe we'll see. What's his face? Who's the other one?
Nimrod.
Yes, Nimrod.
Nimrod. I don't know. I think that's a lot to cover there.
Oh, that's scary.
Nimrod. That would be sweet. It'd be pretty awesome. God, I'm so excited now.
That's scary.
I know. He's a scary dude.
And if the idea takes off and it does well, we can always see, you know, obviously Sentinels get better and better. So with future movies, it's always possible.
Yeah, I mean, dude is just from the Days of Future Past timeline, right. So he might as well make an appearance.
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, fair enough. So that, you know what they'll probably do? We probably won't see him, but we'll see, like, on a drawing board or up on a wall
yeah,
or something.
Some kind of hint of him.
For Nimrod, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it'll be like a project name somewhere that you'll see on a
right,
folder.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
There you go. And speaking of Project Nimrod,
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's basically what we got on the Days of Future Past front as far as news goes.
Nice.
Yep. Moving right along, I suppose, we get to the place where we have a bit more news to go on. Iron Man. Yay! For those of you who live under a rock or who just aren't interested, the Super Bowl happened yesterday. You know,
I honestly don't know who won because I didn't
or,
watch it.
You know, if you're not a fan, then there was a Beyonce concert and there was a football game around that.
Yep.
So,
yeah. Beyonce!
Yeah. And just so you know, during this major media event, they like to play a lot of movie trailers and promotional spots for things that are coming out pretty soon. And one that got a coveted spot during airtime was an extended look at Iron Man 3, which is the biggest tease, by the way, if you know what I'm talking about. I'll give you a brief rundown of what the content ensued. It began with saying it was an extended look. And then it had Robert Downey Jr. literally come on screen, take off his glasses, and look around for about 30, 45 seconds. About a minute or so, he just kind of just looked.
They got us good.
It was. I saw it, and I'm just like, that is the biggest. I mean, halfway through, I'm just like, no.
Are you serious? That's what they did?
Yep.
Literally dropped the end clip. I think that was more extensive than extended. And just keeps looking, and then it cuts to the trailer.
That's funny.
It was. I couldn't believe they did that. But you know what? Hats off to them for having the balls to go.
Agreed. That's freaking gorgeous.
That was awesome. And then because they had to give us something, they gave us a bit more new screen caps, new bits here and there. Nothing really substantial until we get to the scene where the plane that apparently Iron Man is riding on busts wide open and people go flying out. And they give us more of Tony rescuing those people in that scene. But other than that, really wasn't anything new added. But that is not the big news bit that we have for you. No. I don't know if any of you people who listen to this probably keep a decent tab on spoilers and such, and, you know, comic book fans, they have a tendency to predict what's coming, because, you know, the source material is already written when they decide to pick it up. But what we have here is apparently somebody put out a toy from the Iron Man 3 line that supposedly depicted Iron Man in a quote-unquote deep space suit. Now, again, we don't really have any idea what this might mean, but according to sources, at the end of Iron Man 3, the movie, Tony will actually hook up with the Guardians of the Galaxy to go fight space crime or something. as we've stated, we don't really know what this would mean for the character or the franchise, but apparently this implies Tony going into space to fuck some shit up. Not sure, you know, how that would happen or how that would affect the Guardians of the Galaxy movie in play, but, you know, there you go. That's what we have. So what do you guys think of that?
I think they run the risk if they are touching on the whole Guardians of the Galaxy with Tony Stark thing. I think they're running the risk of people being pissed off again, just like the last Iron Man was a setup for Avengers. People are going to feel like this is going to turn into a setup for Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Yeah, well, now see, I kind of disagree with that. Not because I don't think they're kind of repeating themselves, because they kind of are. But with what we got with Iron Man 2, much more of the plot was based around starting up Avengers, which is not really a smart thing to do, because, you know, they sacrificed a lot of character development and possible cool moments for continuity, you know. And so with this, I really think I hope they get back to basics. I mean, Shane Black and RDJ have worked together before, and Marvel undoubtedly heard what fans had to say about the sequel. So I think that outside influences will play a smaller role in terms of what we've seen come before with Iron Man. But as far as, you know, like ending stingers or, you know, little closing scenes depicting Marvel characters breaching out into a larger world, that's nothing new. That was the first Iron Man movie. When Nick Fury came in, and it's like, hey, Avengers. And then from then on, it was pretty much just bridging all the ending scenes, bridged one movie into another. So it's not unheard of. I do agree with you. I do hope they don't, you know, go all out of their way to say, hey, Guardians of the Galaxy, kids, like in the middle of the Iron Man.
Like dropping hints left and right the entire time, the way we kept bringing up S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff. That's my biggest worry. This isn't the first time we've had toys that supposedly ruin villains or things that are going. I mean, I believe it happened with the villains for the Avengers movie when it first came out. It might have been Toys R Us or somebody that dropped out some little tiny toys that finally proved what made people start thinking that it was going to be the Skrulls. With this, it might be substantial. I mean, if it's just for a teaser at the end of the movie or like a tail end trailer, I don't think they would base a whole toy around that, you know? I think that might be just, why spend all that money for something that only appeared at the end of a teaser?
That's true.
You know?
And again, Warner Bros. Did put out Batman toys that had no bearing on the plot.
I was about to bring that up too. You said the same thing. How many toys have we seen? I mean, Funko is no rinky-dink company, you know? They make decent quality toys, but how often have we gone into a store and seen Batman or Spider-Man or Superman with these ridiculous get-ups and extra shit that is unnecessary and has never been worn ever, you know?
That is true, yeah.
It's all fun speculation, though. My biggest worry and what I'm hoping it's not doing is if we're going to get another, let's start setting up the next movie and all of our movies blatantly, you know, I think the tail end sequences are enough. When we get those little teases at the end after the credits, I think that's the way you bridge, and you do a one little 2 minute, here's what's going on and here's our overarching story, but don't interrupt the man. I want to see a movie about Tony Stark and Tony Stark being Iron Man, pretty much.
Yeah. Because that's how RDJ shines, really. You give him the camera, you just let him go. You let him go and you let him be, you know, Tony Stark. You don't stifle that.
All right.
But that's what we got for in terms of Iron Man 3. And we do have one last bit of news to talk about before we move on into reviews. Now, I guess going back to what we said about Iron Man, this whole franchise started as like an idea. You know, you would introduce characters in their own, you know, in their own movies, on their own turf. And then, when you built up enough hype and popularity, you brought them together. Now, Marvel did this exceptionally well. They planned out their movies well, and they put out the Avengers after a reasonable amount of time and movies had been put into it. And look what fucking happened. So what we got today is news about supposedly Marvel's Phase 3, which is to come after 4-2, Cap 2, Guardians of the Galaxy, and Avengers 2. So this is after that. What we have is a supposed report out of Latino Review saying that at the end of Avengers 2, there will be shown a scene where the Hulk, supposedly becoming too big a threat to handle, is launched into space, thus creating the Planet Hulk storyline and another solo movie for Mark Ruffalo to star in as Bruce Banner slash the Hulk. Now, what this would do in terms of the whole span of Phase 3 is it would pretty much set up, supposedly, the third Avengers film to be based around the storyline of World War Hulk, where Hulk returns to Earth and gets revenge on those who shipped him out to space. Now, what this also implies is that Marvel will be activating the Illuminati, which is all the most, you know, the biggest power brokers in the Marvel Universe coming together and deciding they're going to secretly run the world. And so who this brings together is beyond me, but we did hear talk of Doctor Strange recently getting a movie. Tony Stark was in there. Charles Xavier is a bit out of the question given Fox's little, you know, owning of that property. But we could have other characters supposedly appear, perhaps maybe Black Panther if they wised up and gave him a movie. Maybe Black Bolt.
Still never know. Namor.
Namor too. Yes, thank you. So all these characters floating around supposedly being brought into the Illuminati. And maybe we'll see even Cap join up, because he did join eventually. He hated it, but he joined. So basically what we get is this. At the end of Avengers 2, Hulk is sent into space. He gets a solo movie about Planet Hulk, comes back, and Avengers 3 is basically World War Hulk. What do we think of this?
I think it. I have not read Planet Hulk. I have only read World War Hulk, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I have yet to read Planet Hulk. Okay. So I know nothing of that. My knowledge of that comes from the Marvel animated movie that they did, which I also enjoyed. I'm not sure how much it varied from the source material itself. So they said this is going to take place after Avengers 2. That would be a lot of ground to cover, because we can't just start the Hulk. As far as we know now, the general public knows now, Hulk's a good guy. He's not out of control. We know Bruce Banner can somewhat control it or send it in the right direction to help. So between now and this movie, we have to find out what changes in the Hulk to make him become the quote-unquote menace or being unable to handle that they would want to shoot him off to space to begin with. Which makes me have to question, where do you cover that in? Does it happen in Avengers 2? And do you have the time to do that when dealing with these, just judging off the teaser, if we're dealing with Thanos? Do we have the time to flesh that out, and what brings that along? So that's what I'm curious about. You just can't start the movie from being the last time we ever see the Hulk would be Avengers being a good guy, supposedly Avengers 2, and assumedly still a good guy, to all of a sudden being, he's too dangerous, we need to ship him off world right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where I'm at, because they're working with Norton's Hulk, who by and large is actually pretty safe as long as you really don't fuck with him.
Right.
You know, and he's, you know, he's shown that he can actually manage, you know, combining Norton's Hulk and Ruffalo's Hulk. He can manage his transformation, and he can handle, you know, stuff that goes on barring, you know, superhuman, you know, intervention and, you know, trying to make him get mad, you know, unreasonably. But if they do something like that, and bearing in mind, we're also talking, as of Avengers, he's kind of on S.H.I.E.L.D.'s payroll, kind of, sort of, you know? Mm-hmm. He's at least, they've kind of got their thumb on him, but he knows about it. So to see something like that happen, and remember, it was S.H.I.E.L.D. that sent him off into space in you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. with the Illuminati that sent his ass out. For that to happen, that would just be really kind of both odd and wrong, you know, because how can you recruit somebody who was minding his own business, doing all this, you know, good and wasn't bothering anybody, he's over here, blah, 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 and yeah, at the end of Avengers, they kind of go their separate ways, but he knows where to get them, and da-da-da-da-da-da, and then all of a sudden, arbitrarily, well, you know, it's not safe having him here. Yeah, let's get rid of him. And then all of the good, smart guys go, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. You know, that doesn't make any sense to me. You know, and there's none of the buildup that, such as it was, that led to the Illuminati doing what they did. This is just going to come from space because, well, it's the most recent thing that, you know, happened with Hulk that a lot of people talk about. So, yeah, let's use that story. That's kind of lazy writing to me. You know,
This is definitely where a drawback of Hulk not having had another movie since Ed Norton's little foray into it. Because we only got, after that, pretty much him and Avengers, and that was it. That was all we saw of Hulk. I mean, and now we got Thor got a sequel, Cap got a sequel, Iron Man gets a third movie. Ant-Man gets a movie, and Hulk doesn't get a second one in between all this time.
Right.
It does seem far-fetched they would stretch it out for this far, but, you know, it does make me wonder also, you know, what the hell he does to get, like, okay, we gotta get this guy off the fucking planet, you know?
Yeah, see, that's why I don't trust it, because if it does become something like that, then it's gonna be some manufactured stuff that'll happen in between movies and appearances that, you know, you'll just have to swallow and roll with. And I don't think you should have to do that.
Me neither.
You know, I don't think you should have to do that. I also think that they don't need to start, you know, going through, you know, the most recent comic stuff so early in the character's movie life. You know, they've got time. It's not like the Hulk movies perform horribly, you know. Yeah, they may not be the big $300 million makers, but so fucking what? All that means is that you've got a character that can sell a movie decently. That means you don't necessarily have to spend $300 million to make the movie. You can spend $50 million, and he'll make, like, maybe about $1.50, which is fine, you know. Do something with the character that's organic and decent. Don't just start rating the most recent shit because, well, this is what everybody's talking about. Fuck that, you know. Because the problem is when you start doing like that, well, then you run out of ideas because you've gone through all the most recent shit already and you have nothing left. You know, I would hope that this does not happen, because if it does, I'll be disappointed, and I bet you it'll be done horribly on screen.
Oh, no, hold on. That's a bit of a stretch, because I read both of the stories, Planet Hulk, and I actually read World War Hulk first as it came out when I picked up the trade of Planet Hulk. But the stories themselves were very well put together, and this is actually a lot of what granted Banner control over the Hulk originally in the, you know, because when he came to Earth as Hulk, he was eloquent, he spoke fine. Granted, he never got out of the Hulk state, but they had to bring in the fucking Sentry to bring this guy down. So,
yeah, the stories themselves are... Yeah, but that's the first time he'd been like that. He got put like that back in Peter David's run.
Are we talking like Mr. Fix-It here?
Oh, Professor
Hulk. No, straight up Hulk.
No, Professor Hulk.
Yeah.
Okay. See, exactly. This goes back further. That's what
okay.
You know,
fair
this
enough.
That's
okay.
Older than 5 years, you know, so okay. That's why you shouldn't just rate stories from 5 years ago. This is a character who's, almost 50?
Probably about, yeah, he's creeping on it. It's not there already.
Yeah, you know, so, yeah, so we're talking about 50, almost about 50 years old. So while you may not be able to go too far back and find a whole lot of deep, meaningful, you know, storylines, there's a few there, you know? You don't have to just raid the most recent shit because you can't think of anything else to do, you know? That's lame, you know, and it's lazy.
Okay, yeah, I suppose. But then, of course, let's be clear. This isn't happening until years down the line, after
right.
2015. We have no confirmations or even a denial of anything. This is all purely speculation and spoilers at this point. So, shocker, he could be wrong. That's granted. But as far as them going this route in the storyline goes, it really does hinge on how you handle Hulk as a character and what you do with him before that. Because,
right.
like you said, as of right now, he's a good guy. He helped, you know, he's helped defeat an invasion, and Banner has fairly decent control.
More importantly, he's not a threat. That's what it is.
That's true, too.
That's the whole reason why they're trying to get rid of him. They think he's a threat. He's not a threat.
Exactly.
So, I mean, if anything, this is a man who could work in a bagel shop, you know, in Soho. And aside from having to put up with hipsters, he'd be perfectly fine as long as you didn't get some dink who was like, hey, how come this bagel is slightly off kilter?
And throws it at him.
And it throws it at you and spits on him and says his mother sucks cocks in hell. You know? As long as that scenario doesn't bring itself to the fore, he's fine.
Right.
You know? So they would really have to kind of manufacture, you know, unless they give us another movie and then that happens.
Yes, that's where my thought process. There has to be another movie somewhere in there and where that happens, and it needs to not be in somebody else's movie. Hulk has to have his own transition, because I'm not saying that him becoming a threat again doesn't need to happen and that's stupid. No, because it's happened in the comics tons of times. The amount of times the Hulk has been good, bad, in his right mind, in his wrong mind, Bruce on their side, not on his side, Bruce in control, not in control. You know, it's been done a million times. So doing it in the movie isn't that far-fetched. Hell, even if you wanted to take it from a standpoint of, yes, he's saving people, but at the same time, look at all the amount of destruction he's causing, so he's too big of a problem, get rid of him. But it still needs to happen in a movie before any kind of planet or world Hulks happen.
Right, I agree with that.
So that's where we stand then? That they need to clean their shit up with the Hulk and handle it better?
That's where I stand. He needs another standalone.
That holds true for any character, really. You know, don't just, well, we want to do this storyline, so we're going to just toss this one line out there and get this done and then yay! You know, fuck you. But I'm a fan, so, you know, that's how I think.
Okay, then.
Well, alrighty. I think that'll wrap it up for this week's news. Some of these conversations actually went on a bit longer than I thought they would, but no problem there. That was pretty good. We're now going to move on to our book of the week, which is Hawkeye number 7. This is written by Matt Fraction, and it is co-artist. There are two stories, one involving Clint Barton Hawkeye and the other Kate Bishop Hawkeye. The Clint Barton Hawkeye is being drawn by Steve Lieber. I'm not quite sure how you pronounce that. And the Kate Bishop story is written by Jesse Hamm. This issue is a special issue that I don't want to say rush to deal, but they changed their schedules and tweaked it around a bit to make sure it came out right around the time when it would be relevant for what was going on. As we all know, a few months ago, New York City, where Taser and I reside, was hit by quite the hurricane that, with all the prep
that... It's a bit of a windy time.
Coming in?
Bit of a windy time.
Yes. While even though we were incredibly prepared, still not as, I guess, prepared as we thought we were, but New York got hit by Hurricane Sandy, and some people got it pretty bad. Some people are still dealing with the effects and suffering from it. So Fraction and company got together and decided that they would come out with this special standalone issue, and all of the proceeds from this comic actually is going to charity, which is also really awesome. And Fraction, I did not know. I just found out after doing a little background. Used to live in New York, but he's out west, obviously, when he was writing this. But we first follow our story of Clint, who is helping one of his housemates, or one of the people that live in his building, taking him over to his father's house in Far Rockaway. For me and Taser, we know where that is, and it the title is not a lie. It is Far Rockaway.
Yes.
It is quite far away.
So.
That was one of the areas, I guess, while bring this up, I'll bring up some of the little history and a little bit of knowledge of New York to draw a better picture. Where this is going on, this is actually one of the flood evacuation zones or warning zones in New York City when the hurricane was happening. So you see that the father is kind of curmudgeonly, doesn't really, not a fan of his son. Grills is the character's name, hasn't really done anything, cleared anything out of the basement. He's kind of just sitting there, doesn't think it's going to be a big deal. Throws around the line that most old-timers do because they've seen every hurricane that's come and gone. It's just a little water. Taser, that's going to be you. Probably. Yeah, it's just some water. Shut up, you kids. And Grills is mad. His mother's dead. He gets upset that the father hasn't saved any of his mother's stuff or brought it up out of the basement so it doesn't run over and get flooding. They have a bit of an argument. And while this is all going on, Hawkeye runs outside and sees that there's just tons of water rising up in into the house, and it's flooding the area, and he gradually helps them to get out and helps them reconvene and realize, you know, even though the mother and the wife are not still around, they do still have each other, and they should be there for each other. So it was a nice, pleasant story, and we switch over right after that to Kate Bishop, who was on her way to a wedding in New Jersey on the Hurricane Sandy day. That was a terrible idea, considering the conditions that we had out there at the time. I had to laugh. That dress that they have her in, I haven't been reading this book, so I'm not sure. I remember Kate Bishop's character from Young Avengers, and I think, funny enough, one of the first times we saw her was at a party or a bridal shower of something like that.
It was
nature.
At a wedding, actually.
Yeah, it was at a wedding, this girl, and she's not a fan. And this one, I think she was just an attendee. Now here, she is a bridesmaid-to-be and a terrible dress-wearing bridesmaid at that. That thing is just, it is horrible. I flipped to the page and it caught my eye before I could even read the rest of what was going on, because it's just, considering the tones of the rest of the book, and it's just that purple that pops up out of nowhere. It's just a horrible looking thing, and she looks so uncomfortable. She gets to the hotel, and from the point where she's standing in the hotel, she's seeing the waves crashing and hit, while all the while the hotel manager is telling her this place is safe, it's never been flooded, we've never had any problem, we've seen this hurricane and that hurricane, we've never had any issues. We cut to another panel, and it shows a bunch of sparks going off in the city, and half the power goes out. I'm actually glad they included this in here too, because that is something that there's quite a few videos of on the internet. You see on videos the transformer that just exploded and caught on fire in Manhattan, and then all of Manhattan, or I'm sorry, the lower half of Manhattan just go completely dark, which, for those that know New York City, that's really uncommon. New York City is very rarely, if ever, completely dark in sections. You never really see that, and seeing that on TV was really kind of jarring. When everything settles, you know, the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy, stores aren't open, things aren't running properly, people only are carrying so much medicine, so Kate decides that she's going to run out and try and restock and run over to Duane Reade. She gets there, and people are, of course, looting, as does happen in emergencies such as these. She gets caught off guard and knocked out. She wakes up thinking that the guys got away with all of her equipment and all of the stuff in the groceries. Come to find out, the good people of the neighborhood have actually stopped the robbers and have gotten her gear back and brought back for her to see, which is further showing that, you know, even though things are falling apart, the community does gather up together and, you know, help each other out, which a lot of that did happen. You know, you see, you always hear people in New York are rude, or, you know, they don't really help each other out, but a lot of people in New York came together and really pulled their weight around and helped others that needed it, and it was a great sense of community. All in all, I really liked this issue. The art was lovely for both ends. I think they fit the tone of both characters very well for their respective stories. Kate Bishop telling us that Jersey is not as bad as we think it is, even though it really is. And good old Clint in trying to prove Brooklyn isn't as bad as we think it is, but it really is. I like this a lot. It got across the feel of New York City during this hurricane, you know. It really came out of nowhere, because we had all the news about Irene that came before, which wasn't really that bad, so people were expecting the same. And this one hit really hard. Like I said before earlier, there are still places in New York City and in Brooklyn or Queens, wherever, that still have no power and have no gas, or even worse, have no homes. You know, we had that huge fire that broke out in the middle of Queens during all of this. It was a rough time, and this issue captured that nicely. I'm a big fan of the cover for this book, because, like I said before, with the Transformer kind of blowing and half the city being dark, the way that they split this book in half and the right side of it is all black and dark and the left side with all the white, that's almost pretty much how it looked. Like, it was just complete darkness from middle of Manhattan all the way down to the end, which is a pretty scary thing. But all in all, I would say I would give this a 4 out of 5. And I will go over to Brian. Brian, what did you think of this issue?
Well, unfortunately, I do not share your experiences, because I was not in New York at the time of Hurricane Sandy.
Correct.
But the storm and its effect on people is relayed nonetheless through this story. It's very well played. The thing about this book is it's very, seems very personal. It's a very, it, you know, it delves into the personal lives of Hawkeye outside of being an Avenger, and Kate Bishop too, to some extent. So it really does give you a look of him being, you know, on the ground with the people. And his story really drives that home, where he's, you know, just trying to help a guy get to his dad's house, and then the poor bastard goes in once the flood hits to save some pictures and stuff from his mom, and, you know, then him and his dad reconcile to some extent, and it's really personal and sad, and they end up just kind of chatting in a rowboat as they're just kind of paddling out there, which I thought was kind of cool. And the whole thing with Kate, it really did echo, like, her pretty much her intro into the Marvel proper with her, you know, the whole wedding being interrupted, and then her, the Young Avengers original roster showing up. So it really was an echo of that, except this time she's on her own. And the whole thing where she gets knocked out, I thought that was hilarious. Because I was really thinking, well, if they got her, what the hell are they going to do with her now? That was really nagging at me. And then, of course, we get the next sequence, which is like, why does everything smell like beans? And I'm like, turns out she just had beans on her head. But I think the important thing to take away from this, besides the fact that Jersey does not rule, is the story is very much a personal one. It's about people, and I think it was very well done in that respect. I was not a fan of the art in Kate Bishop's story. I was not. The Hawkeye, Clint Barton one was fine, but you know, Kate Bishop, not a fan of that artwork. And Fraction's writing, of course, is always up to par. He's a great man who does real good dialogue, and it's really a treat to see the guy work with such colorful characters as Hawkeye and Hawkeye. So I give it a 3.5 out of 5. It wasn't my favorite issue, but it was still a great story to read, and I enjoyed it immensely. So.
Alrighty, and then Taser, what did you think of this book?
I understand why this book was done. My problem is that, you know, and it's surprisingly, it's me that says this too soon. You know, I could have done without having, you know, this book come out, you know, as close as it has to, you know, Hurricane Sandy. But part of the problem is that most of this run for Hawkeye has all been about basically more Cliff Barton than Hawkeye. And, you know, this kind of, this easily fits within the context of, you know, who the hell's writing this?
Fraction.
Thank you, Fraction. Fraction's taking a character. So it's not like one of those books that kind of stands out. You know, this just happens to be about, you know, a real event, but, you know, it's happening over in the Marvel Universe. I thought that this would be, in general, I thought this run would be about, you know, Hawkeye doing something. It's really more about Clint Barton and, you know, him being a guy who happens to be an Avenger sometimes. So, the first half, the story with Clint, and, you know, he's there with Grills. That was actually a funny thing, Grills. Your name's not Grills? No, it's Gil.
Grills. Who would think that that's somebody's name?
Yeah, where'd you get that from? Well, that's what everybody else calls you. And, you know, he gets to the house, and he gets his father upstairs, and he goes outside, and he's like, look at the size of that wave, whoa! And, you know, that kind of, that was by the numbers, you know, for me. That was, you know, stories I'd heard from people who lived, you know, unfortunately, some who lived down in Rockaway, some who lived, you know, freaking Bensonhurst, you know, people who, you know, had their car parked in their garage, and, you know, a day later they found it, you know, about a mile and a half away, you know, upside down in somebody's, you know, floral arrangement, you know, boats that, you know, ended up 3 miles inland, you know, from the dock and all of that weird shit. I didn't need this, you know, I mean, it was a well done story. I did smile at the, you know, appropriate parts where you're supposed to, but I want Hawkeye to do more. I want Hawkeye to do more. I'm kind of tired of Clint Barton. Excuse me. I want more Hawkeye. You know,
then read Avengers.
And that's the part of the problem. You know, and then
we'll get to that.
The other half, the thing with Kate. Kate is it me or is Kate a bitch?
She's always kind of been like that. She's stubborn and she's very brash. And she does borderline bitch status. And some points has even surpassed that in some issues of Young Avengers. But she was always a difficult one to deal with.
Okay, because I'm just looking at her appearance in this in general, and you know the stuff that I've seen her in the past. And I've only read like those last two Young Avengers miniseries.
Yeah.
For any story with her, because I didn't read any of that before. I will say I did like the bit where her and Hawkeye got into that argument over who was the better guitarist.
Yes.
Yeah, I think he said it's a human.
Like
and he's like, what? You know, guitarist for Kiss from what was it, 84 to 93.
From Brooklyn. Done.
And then she went, get out. My apartment. Get out.
The only thing from missing from that comment was him dropping a microphone.
Yeah.
Serve. Now get out.
Oh, that made me smile right there. And then the look on her face was freaking priceless. But you know, that thing with her where she goes to Jersey and she has that conversation with the Maitre d', or whatever the hell he was, and this guy's talking about how the building survived the Great Atlantic Hurricane, Ash Wednesday Storm, Hurricane Gloria, the Halloween Nor'easter Floyd. Puddles, nothing to worry about. This stable is a fortress. Yeah, but what about the surrounding neighborhood? You idiot. You know, despite the fact that your building may not flood, the area around you, you know, can be severely affected, which will affect you also. So, you know, a bit of, you know, false pride and, you know, seeing all the flooding and, oh, look, the parking garage and everything else, and the transformers going out. And he's like, what? You know, and see those green explosions? Those were power transformers. What time is it now? 8:47. Wow. So it only took you 1 minute to go from hotel manager to completely useless. I put a smile on my face. But, and then the rest of it is her doing the action thing and saving the woman who didn't have medicine, and while everybody else kind of went, what's going to happen to us now? Fucking lazy fucks. This story didn't resonate as much with me as Clint's did, and Clint didn't resonate with me all that well, to be perfectly honest. Again, some smiley parts. The Jersey rules, that was like, yeah. Sure.
I prefer Hawkeye's line that Jersey is a punchline. I vastly prefer that little quip.
You know, and then you know the when they come back together and he's coming home, she's and oddly enough she looks like she's coming home. You know,
walk of shame thing.
Yeah, you know, like we survived Queens on fire. We survived Queens on fire underwater. East. I'm exhausted. Can I crash here? I mean, granted, she says that, but it's like she had it there. You know, she couldn't – there was no place else for her to go. That was she went from Jersey to Queens. That's at least 50 minutes, you know. So she would have had to have passed through Manhattan. I'm surprised she didn't live there. But, you know, this is – what was it, like the day after or whatever? So,
yeah.
You know, you could kind of write anything in there. I don't know. It just seemed kind of odd. And then, you know, that whole – she was going to take the bed and he gets the couch. It's my apartment. I'm a guest. It's like, well, be my guest. Thank you, Hawkeye. After you, Hawkeye. And a nice bit of charming thing here. But, yeah, overall, yeah, there were some funny parts, but I didn't need this. I didn't need this story. You know, I really didn't.
Yes, you did. You just
No, I didn't. I want Hawkeye to do. I want Clint Barton to do Hawkeye stuff. You know, and I don't mean these Russian gangster guys who call me bro. You know?
Bro. Hey, those guys are awesome. I love the bro Russians. Come
on. Except when, you know, he's got like three of them and he gets knocked out. I've seen Hawkeye take on five superhuman guys and beat them. He's getting his ass like, yes. Because, you know, he's been an Avenger for a long time, so I've actually seen stuff like that.
And
Hawkeye has actually quite a few good showings in him. None of which happened maybe within the last 5 years or so, pre Wanda influenced backpack into the Kree super
and Ronin
death exploding thing. Before that, yes, Hawkeye actually did have some cool showings. I want superhero. You know, this is normal guy who does stuff, and I'm kind of tired of it. You know. It's taken me a long time with this, but this issue here has really kind of pushed it forward for me in how it's not selling me. You know, it's not selling me as strong as my enthusiasm isn't there like when it started. You know, I was looking forward to shit. I didn't think it would be so much slice of life, a normal guy. Stuff, you know, I was hoping for something else. Granted, I'm also not that familiar with Fraction's work. You know, I don't pick up books just because of the writer, and I didn't read Marvel for a long time. So when people started saying Matt Fraction, I'm like, who the fuck is that?
Poor Shane.
For the review, the stories were well done, even if I didn't want them. I'll give it a 3.8 out of 5. I hope Fraction does something within the next few issues that, you know, kind of brings back my interest, because it's not falling as hard as it did with Iron Man. That was just atrocious. My God, that book went nowhere. But, you know, this, yeah, he's losing me. He's losing me.
We're losing him.
Clear.
Well, alrighty then. So with that, we will close out our book of the week. Pretty, I would say, mostly favorable scores. I mean, we had a 3.5, a 3.8, and a 4.5. So we're all kind of in the same realm of the issue. It wasn't bad. I would be intrigued to actually see how many issues of this sold. I guess just to see how much kind of a donation. There was no comments or saying anything that anybody would match it, but it's good that they did something like this to kind of help to the cause. Any little bit helps, any lot of bit helps anybody that was affected by this. So again, well wishes and hearts going out to those still being affected, and hopefully things getting better then.
Yeah, God bless to anybody and, you know, efforts you have to take to get through, you know, the mess that storm put you through.
Yeah.
You know, seriously.
God bless y'all out in Jersey for fucking living in Jersey.
You need it. You try. You guys try out in Jersey. And with that, we are going to move on to our individual reviews. I think this week I'm going to start it off with Brian, who is reviewing Punisher Warzone number 4 of 5.
Yes, sir. And this one's dedicated to you, Iggy. Yeah, the old boss. Okay, so for those of you who don't remember, last issue, Frank and Thor had a beer, and they discussed what Frank was going to do. And he was kind of left wondering if he should help out Rachel Cole Alves, his former accomplice and protege, who was on trial. And we learned that she is now found guilty of her crimes and is going to be put to death. And immediately, Steve knows Punisher's going to try something to get her out. Because his logic is that to him being Marine, he's going to have a sense of duty, et cetera, et cetera. And so, so we get a scene of Cap, Black Widow, and Tony kind of lounging around like, okay, so if we were Punisher, what would we do? And they're kind of just trying to figure out how exactly how he would go about getting Rachel Cole Alves out of prison. And they determine that the time he is going to try and hit them will be as they are transporting her. From the courthouse to the prison.
in between all this, we see Punisher lead a raid on some kind of criminal den in the South Bronx, and he takes a few of the criminals there hostage, and presumably he is planning something, and we get more of that later on. Cap approaches Wolverine in between, pretty much says, "Hey, I can't really trust you with this. You're kind of impartial. You're kind of partial towards Castle and what he does. So for this moment in time, you are benched." And
fuck Captain America, God.
Yeah, he benches Logan and pretty much says, "I see you tomorrow. I'm going to assume you're working with him, not us. Are we clear?" And Logan pretty much goes, "Just, you know, your funeral," and blows him off, which I think is the appropriate response. But we do kind of get just kind of cat big in it. You know, it's like, Logan does make a valid point. He's like, you know, you think you can handle Punisher alone? You're wrong. The only one of you who hasn't underestimated him is Natasha, and you need me. And Cap goes, "Yeah, maybe, but I can't trust you." Granted, Wolverine did kind of go and tell Frank, "Hey, dude, you gotta watch your back here." But still, you should expect when the chips are down and it matters, you gotta expect Wolverine will follow through for you. When does he never follow through for you? So we get that disrespect a little bit. And before we get to the coup de grace, we get one more scene of Stark chilling out and, I guess, preparing his suits or modifying, pouring maintenance, something or other. And it's pretty much just him rambling to himself, tapping a few things. But in the last panel of the page, you kind of see a guy in a skull shirt lurking in the background. And then we come to the court scene. We got Spider-Man running lookout. Cap's going to be driving the transport. And we see Rachel Klaus loaded into the back. And then as they begin transporting her, Spidey keeps eyes on the courthouse. He kind of stays in New York. But they have Thor keeping watch overhead as Cap transports. And as expected, shit goes to hell. The van gets blown up and Cap crashes into a fucking tree. They come under fire and there's like, firefight, firefight. And after Cap relays this to the team back at the courthouse, Spider-Man essentially, Spider-Man goes into the courthouse and Rachel Cole Alves is still there. She has not moved. And she figures correctly that they are using her as bait to draw Frank out and get a hold of him while, you know, not exactly risking her life. However, and you're going to love this, so stick with me, folks. Frank Castle is driving the Iron Man armor. And he sits in as Tony with Spider-Man in the courthouse. And then when Spider-Man least suspects it, Frank blows his ass to hell. Let me reiterate that. Frank carjacked the Iron Man suit from Tony. Pretty much just sat there silently and and picked this time to go, "Hey, Spidey, fuck you."
That's awesome.
It was awesome. It was a little ridiculous, but it was awesome. And she puts together two and two pretty quickly. Frank's like, "Hey, come on, we don't have much time, and I can barely manage to fly this thing." And so Frank, in the Iron Man suit, busts Rachel out, and Cap and Thor, still under fire from the people out in God knows where, put together that it's rubber bullets. And what we get from this is that the person in the truck was actually Natasha, who was, of course, she was the bait for Frank. And it turns out that the people firing on Cap and Thor are the criminals Frank pulled from the den the other night and made them go and fire on the fucking Avengers or he would kill them. So essentially what we have here, and follow with me, folks, we have Frank Castle in the Iron Man suit breaking Rachel Cole Alves out of the courthouse after blasting Spidey half to hell. Captain America and Thor under fire from criminals who are being blackmailed by Frank Castle into killing the Avengers, but Natasha, who is actually, you know, in the back of the truck instead of Rachel, comes out and gets the goons down and figures out at once that they've been played by Frank. And that is where we end this lovely issue of Punisher Warzone. Kind of on a real just cliffhanger of, okay, Frank did this. Now what the hell are they going to do? And the Avengers have been screwed over for the most part. So we really do get a sense that, okay, Frank keeps screwing with these guys. He kind of threw it in their face this time. He got the better of them. So now it's really a matter of what are they going to do to get Frank. And that's really setting up the final issue of this limited series here. Iggy would have been better at probably projecting where this was going to be going, but I cannot for the life of me see a direction where, you know, where Frank doesn't get out of this, you know, not pissing anybody off. It's really a difficult position. Red Rekka did great, great art. I loved his dialogue. I loved how he methodically plotted out, you know, Frank's thought process. And it really does a good job of painting Frank as a tactical genius. And Iggy's, or, you know, he's geeked out about something now, but Rekka does a really good job of writing Frank Castle. And Carmine did Gian Domenico.
did you do that phonetically?
Yeah, I did. I had to set that. It's Carmine, then D-I, space, Gian Domenico on pencils. Yeah. And also Hollingsworth on color. The art does a reasonably good job. I'm not a fan of the way he draws Tony Stark in the beginning. They kind of put Tony in this obnoxiously bright red and yellow business suit like he's fucking Liberace or something, and I'm not a fan of that. But otherwise, the art isn't half bad. Even though the females do have a tendency to look a little mannish, and Logan kind of looks a little femaleish in certain respects.
Ah.
Yeah. But overall, it was not a bad issue. It was a very entertaining, very enjoyable issue. And if you're a Punisher fan and you've been keeping up with Warzone, it's a really, really good read. I recommend it. I'll give it a 4 out of 5, which is ironic considering it is issue 4 out of 5. So, yay for themes. Yes, so 4 out of 5. And Iggy, if you're listening out there in the ether somewhere, that was for you, boss man.
If I might interject for a bit...
Of course.
Is it me, or is Captain America such the biggest douche ever since he became, you know, top shit cop?
Self-righteous.
Insanely self-righteous. I mean,
he's a big man on campus. Of course he's going to step in, and now we're going to do America my way. This is the Cap that we've got now.
I guess not that I couldn't see that happening early on, but... Captain America to me was a guy who kind of knew, yeah, that may be a good place for me to be, but yeah, I don't want to do that. I may hang with Nick Fury every now and again, but I don't want to be a part of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, he knew, yeah, that's a little bit too much power. I don't want that.
Civil War. He didn't want to be a part of that power structure.
Exactly. And notice now that he's dead, he's centralized there. Notice that everything is, and again, it's going back to my S.H.I.E.L.D. rant. Everything is S.H.I.E.L.D. oriented. You know, what Captain America and Tony are both S.H.I.E.L.D.'s top two agents for all intents and purposes. I mean, think about that. You know, I know that Stark had been what was it? I think Secretary of Defense. Disassembled, but still in all, you know, there's some, it's like, okay, Avengers has always had like a government charter, you know, and I'm fine with that. You know, the JLA did that too, but the JLA wasn't beholden to the government the way the Avengers are now. You know, it's almost, you see, you have Spider-Man working for the feds. That's just wrong. And on top of which, you have Captain America, for all intents and purposes, acting like my dick is gigantic, and I'm in charge.
That's my Nick Fury.
Nick Fury wasn't like that. Nick Fury was a guy... Nick Fury was a guy who knew what he had to do and tried to be as quiet as possible doing it. That's not Cap. And Nick Fury was... He's not. Nick Fury was better at it. I'm gonna say that. You know, I look at the way things are happening now. You know, with S.H.I.E.L.D. and Avengers, and I'm just, what the fuck am I looking at here? This is just wrong. And then to see, you know, this stuff here, where it's like, yeah, we have to take out Punisher. No, it's not like, you know, the guy hasn't been around for like, you know, what, fucking 30 fucking years, you know, maybe 10 years, you know, Marvel time.
Whatever Vietnam, you know, was, he was around since.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, let's say in comic universe, because Vietnam and World War II and everything, all of that happened within about 10 years.
Yeah, it's true. It's a very unstable world they live in over there.
You know, but it's just weird to see, it's weird to see how that dynamic changed and how it's changed certain characters. That's partly why I can't read Captain America now, because Cap's an imperialist. All right, maybe not really, but he's headed there. Cap is the top cop. Cap, the Captain America that I read when I was reading, you know, comics, when I was reading Marvel, would never have taken that position. You know, now it's a whole new ball game. Yeah, I understand that things should change. You know, you can't, you know, play everything the same way and yada da 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 da. But this is just, I'm uncomfortable. You know, Cap is he's a man with a badge. Before he was a man with a shield. Now he's a man with a badge. He's a Fed. You know,
I can just imagine like Cap being drilled like, Rogers, I am sick of your loose gun antics, you man.
You know. Well, let's make it blunt. AVX. Captain America showing up on Utopia. Yeah, Scott, I need you to give me the girl. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Did I tell you that was a request? You know? Oh, like, what the fuck? You know? So, yeah, right there that kind of tells you how they're playing Cap now. Sure, Cap's still, you know, up, you know, righteous and upholding and the American way and liberty and justice for all and everything else like that. But he's that guy who's like, you know what? I got the law behind me. You know, and that's just kind of a scary thing to me. You know, I bet you something's going to happen like down the line where it's going to get to Cap's head and he's going to suffer a great fall and he'll need to go nomad or some shit for, you know.
Oh,
for,
shit, not nomad. You
know? Again?
Yeah, he's going to have to change identities again, you know.
Oh, God, no.
But I don't know. I just listening to that issue of Punisher Max, I'm just, wow, you know. It's like, jeez.
All right, we're going to mosey on along. I will be going next with the next issue of the Superior Spider-Man. This is issue 2 of the Superior Spider-Man. I have appropriately titled this, and as it says throughout the book, The Trials of Dating Mary Jane Watson, in more than one sense of the word. This book, the mentality behind this book, I think, as I'm sure you'll hear other places, this book, I think, captures the fans' voice more than anything else, because throughout the entirety of this book, we have got Phantom Zone Peter Parker that is somewhere trapped in the recesses of Dr. Octopus, Dr. Peter Spider-Ock, whatever the hell you want to call him these days. You know, you can't run out of names for what to call whoever he's pretending to be these days. But we're kind of seeing him going through all the freak out and witnessing all of these things that Octavius is doing with his life. We start off the issue with him having just recovered some science equipment that was stolen, and now J. Jonah Jameson is finally gung-ho on the Spidey bandwagon. He can't say enough good things about Spider-Man, and Peter Parker, way back in the mind, is just flipping out. Like, all of this happens, and it happens now when I'm not even around to enjoy it. What kind of bullshit is this?
That really is like a kick in the balls.
Right, which this book, and with Peter being in the background the way he is, being able to witness everything going on but not be able to affect it, and whether it be good or bad, is yet another new level of the Parker luck. Like, of all things, of course, some other things are going great, and now I'm not even around to experience it. We cut to a scene in a coffee shop between Carly and MJ. MJ seems to kind of feel that something is off, as well as Carly does start feeling off, but this is where MJ decides to reveal that she thinks her and Peter are getting back together, and Carly appropriately almost chokes all over her coffee. Peter Parker shows up for lunch with MJ, all dapper and in his Mad Men suit as he's fond of wearing nowadays. But of course, midway through, as with Peter, trouble zooms by and he's ready to ignore it until MJ is like, hey, you, by the way, you're Spider-Man. Don't you think you want to go run out and take care of that? Which gets him all frustrated because now it's interrupting the date with MJ.
Damn it, I'm trying to get laid here.
Exactly. Like, just superhero styled cock blocking going on left and right in this book. So, being of the superior mind, as he is fond of reminding us over and over and over and over again in this book, he decides that he's going to create a whole bunch of spider bots, or he creates one master spider bot and decides to make it create about 800 or so more. And sends them all out on patrol so he can go off and have a date with Mary Jane. And if anything comes up, or if anything's in trouble, he can look on his lovely Horizons version iPad and be right there or get there as quick as he can, where even Peter himself admits, hey, that's actually kind of clever. Why didn't I think of something like that? You see them go on a couple of dates. Their first date, they go to a planetarium. He apparently pulls the old yawn and stretch routine to try and get a little Mary Jane shoulder and maybe some more. Naturally, it didn't work out there. Just the pure cheesy, can't be trials. Takes her out dancing, ice skating in Central Park. All of this stuff trying to get into MJ's pants, and just nothing is working, and he's getting frustrated, I'm sure, in more ways than one. And finally decides, you know, he can't figure it out. He's like, what the hell? What is this missing element? I'm Peter Parker. She should be with me. To which the real Peter states, do you really think
that's the order of things?
Right. It's just how it should be. I'm Peter Parker. She's Mary Jane. Let's get going. And it's just not working out for him. And Peter says, you think that's all there is to it? It's just the fact that we're so-and-so. We're destined to be together. There's much more and you'll never figure it out. To which Otto realizes the one thing that is missing, and there's the fact that he's Spider-Man, and he takes Mary Jane out swinging through the city, which is something that we all know Peter Parker and MJ were very fond of doing together, which he feels he has achieved success now. Takes her back to her apartment, thinks, this is it, I'm finally going to get me some MJ going on. MJ once again, or Peter once again being cock-blocked by Carly, his two ex-girlfriends shacking up together, one preventing the other from getting it on with any of them. So he runs up, and we get to one of the creepier parts of the book, because, you know, your mind instantly just goes there. Octavius comes to the realization, well, he can't get the real MJ for now, but what he does have is all of Peter's memories of all the times that he spent with MJ. And naturally, your brain has to go, well, what are you doing with those memories? And why are you bringing them up? And this just gets creepier and creepier. So I read through that pretty quick, and
they still have the extra arms.
I could not believe. And then, of course, this is when you see these flashbacks, it's not Peter the way he looks now. Octavius sees it all as him, as what he would look like or does look like currently with dating MJ, which makes it even creepier. Because now you see it's glasses, bespectacled, bowl cut Dr. Octopus kissing up on Mary Jane, doing the whole upside down, pull the mask off your face, kiss, etc., etc. So, yeah, thanks for that creep out factor, Dan Slott.
Hold on, wait. Did they actually leave it with, you know, Spy Doc, or, you know, Doc Spy, whatever we're going to call him? Was he actually, like, left in the bathroom, like George from Seinfeld, you know, trying to spank one out?
I don't know, but right after we have those memories, obviously, he's got those memories, and the next clip we go to is Peter waking up with a big smile on his face, and then he goes to take a shower.
He spanked it out.
that's exactly what you see next, and him running out the door, and even the Phantom Zone Peter is like, oh, can you not do that? Can you not touch my body? It's creepy. Like, it even makes that comment in the book. So say that there's no innuendo in there all you want. It's pretty blatant. We were made to think what we were meant to think, and it's just fucking creepy. So he's having a great day at work. One of his spider tracers, spider bots goes off and realizes there's trouble. MJ's being attacked by a bunch of mini vultures. I guess Vulture's got a new crew going on, and I'm sure we'll see more of that later. So he goes off to save the day, as it were. You get a quick little interjection. While he's off to save Mary Jane, there's a bank robbery going on, and we know our Peter Parker Spider-Man would stop to help with the mugging, rather, and then go to the next step that he was. Ox says, no, priorities. We're skipping the mugging. We're going to this. And as he's battling the bad guys, the vultures see him and drop Mary Jane. So he goes flying at her, tries to do the whole web line, realizes that would kill her or potentially kill her, and does the whole big web line and saves her life. And at this point, with her getting saved, that's where she decides she's kind of ready for them to be back together. And naturally, as it were, Dr. Spider-Ock, now that he's got his memories of MJ and how he really feels about her, or rather how Peter really felt about her, he realizes that the two of them can't be together, and it just doesn't make sense because MJ loves him as Peter and Spider-Man, and he can't be with her because he's Peter and Spider-Man, the old, this is my gift, this is my curse, which kind of upset me because, I mean, how many times has this been done? You know, I was all kind of on board and enjoying the story there, but just... It's the cheesy same old line. Yeah, I see that you fished through Peter's memory, so you kind of got that, but it's almost like, well, you went back in his memories and kind of just stole that reasoning and reused it again, which the comic itself is kind of doing, so that was definitely a big miss on my part. I kind of... There's a part of me, and I'm sure even Taser and probably Brian, that wanted to see this relationship progress and see if it could get any creepier than it already has. But we seem to have
given up on them treating Spider-Man and Mary Jane like adults all a long time ago.
Yeah,
I just want him to have sex with her just to see.
I know you do. I know you do. And it doesn't look like it's going to happen. And Peter, he even applauds. Your best women. he even kind of secretly applauds Spider-Ock for being able to do what he wasn't able to do, which is let go. That whole kind of deal. So we're back to that whole trope, rather. I want to be with you, but I can't be with you because I have the bigger responsibility, et cetera, et cetera. And then we cut back to the scene of MJ and Carly sitting in the apartment having a conversation, and they're kind of discussing how Peter seems like a different person, and we cut to Carly having a flashback of the last battle between the two of them and her remembering Peter in Octavius's body saying that I'm Peter, I'm not Octavius, and that's kind of sticking with her. So as thought from the beginning, I think Carly's going to be a big involvement in cracking this whole mystery that's going on. Somehow that's going to come to light. And I also think another one of their outs, it seems that we've seen this twice now, that Otto has accessed Peter's past memories and it's kind of changed his feelings or emotions to things. I think this is one of the ways that they're going to bring back the original Peter, is that every time he accesses an old memory, somehow more of Peter will take over and Aqualad the fade to the background or whatever will happen to him in that regard. All in all, I will give this book middle of the road. I will give it a 3 out of 5. You lose some points, but I guess keep the 3 for creeping me out superbly. Because no thanks. poor Peter Parker having to watch whatever it is that Octavius did with his body. Poor man. That's definitely gonna wig you out and make you not wanna do anything anymore. And Doug, the art was good. Ryan Stegman, I'm really liking him. I'm trying to remember some of the stuff that he was. I believe he's doing Scarlet Spider as well. It's good in this. Sometimes his facial features, or faces rather, can become a little boxy. But that aside, not too huge of a complaint. It's not jarring or anything like that. But I liked it. I was a big fan. So yeah, 3 out of 5 for this issue. And lastly, we will go to Taser, who is reviewing Avengers number 4.
Yeah, so Avengers 4. Jonathan Hickman, Adam Kubert. Okay, so here's a name I remember. And a person whose work I remember. And Frank D'Armada. No idea. But whatever. Following the events of last issue, this is more about the cleanup back on Earth. They're trying to figure out a way that they can deal with, you know, the bioorganisms that Xilio or whatever the hell that Trihorn yellow or
Xnihilo,
whatever that guy. That dude,
super
man.
God guy.
Yeah, this is exactly. This is the Avengers trying to deal with, you know, the cleanup and how to try to restore whatever they can back, and not really having a whole lot to work with. You know, the areas that got affected by the spores, I'd say we're probably going to look at those as unspoken losses, you know, because, I mean, we've got people who've been cocooned and used as generators to turn up whole new life forms and all kinds of other weird stuff. And this book also kind of spotlights Hyperion, who's not the Hyperion who came over from that all other universe way back when in Grunewald's run. But this is, and it's not Hyperion who apparently was in Exiles. Thanks. I forgot your name, but you were on the Green Lantern message board and you kind of filled me in, so thank you. Excuse me. This is a completely different Hyperion. Okay. Who apparently, along with his Squadron Supreme, got stuck between two planets. You know? And ended up here. And caught by AIM and then ended up being rescued by Captain America and the Avengers at some point. You know, which we didn't know because, well, he didn't exist before. Anyway, so they find that another of the ex-Nihilo, whatever, dudes, Pod's land in Savage Land. So they go there to investigate, and they do play up this Hyperion, you know, like Superman, you know, minus the S-shield. He's looking at stuff, and he's making, you know, all these strange calculations, and, you know, he's utopian-minded, and he looks at Thor. He doesn't look at Thor like, wow, God of Thunder. He's like, hey, you know, I kind of like that. You know, somebody who looks at Thor and is not impressed. I really dig that. On top of which, you know, while he's talking to Thor about, you know, having a weakness for alcohol, hold on, wait a second. Hyperion senses tingling. Oh, there, I see some men, and they're going to do something. You know, I'm like, wow, yeah, this is just right out of the Superman book. So they get over there and they find a bunch of AIM agents extracting DNA, for lack of a better term, out of this plant and injecting it into some poor schlub. And hey, let's see what happens when we stick this stuff, when we suck something out of this and stick it into something else, and the guy apparently drops the head, and they're like, oh, well, damn, that didn't work. Okay, back to the storm board, the Avengers show up, and, you know, it's like, oh, man, the Avengers, damn it, the Avengers, oh, no, the Avengers showed up, and then all of a sudden, the guy's body starts flipping the hell out. Black tentacles shooting out everywhere, and it's like, oh, what the hell, ew, you know. And, you know, the Avengers, yeah, really, you know, and I mean, it's really nasty, the guy's body lying there, but these black octopus-looking tentacles just ripping out of his body, like, ew, you know, especially around the groin. Anyway, and it gets dealt with, you know, next to the next Hyperion, and he finds this new life form that comes out of this cocoon, and it speaks. And he's kind of, I don't know, it's like he understands what it's saying. You know, and this guy's got he's got some plans. You know, it seems like he's trying to figure out a way to fix things or something. And this might be part of it somehow. I'm not sure. But, yeah, I see some machinations that are supposed to help people and will ultimately fail somehow. I see that coming into play at some point in the future. And, you know, the AIM agents get rounded up, and they're like, yeah, good job, Avengers. Yeah, you got us. Yeah, you stopped us. Yeah, we stopped us from getting to the last site. Yeah, you really did a good job of that. Yeah, good job of it. Yeah.
A big complimentary today.
Yeah, because, you know, there was a seventh site. Somewhere where there's a whole lot of snow. And, you know, Yeah, Avengers missed one. Oh, okay, yeah, there you go. This is really more about introducing us to the new Hyperion, letting us see that it's not the ones we've met before. It's a whole new guy, completely different guy. Still with the same kind of costume, still, you know, kind of pulling up. Not really the same mentality, because the one from Squadron Supreme, neither Peter Davids or the one Grunwald brought over into Quasar from, you know, whatever. Completely different outlook on things, you know. This is kind of this guy's kind of like Superman from like back in like the 60s, you know. He kind of looked at things and saw how things worked and how he could use them for a better purpose, you know. So I think that's kind of interesting here. He's really alien, you know. He's not a forthcoming person. He looks at how we do things, and he there's a little bit of judgmentalness there, just a little bit. But it's that's interesting. This issue was actually a good hook, you know. I've enjoyed this book more so than the last three. You know, the last three have been kind of, yeah, okay. This one caught me. You know, this one really grabbed me by the short hairs. So I really dug it. Kudos to Hickman for doing something that I liked, finally.
Only took him this long.
Yeah, right? Well, you know, again, it's, you know, guys who supposedly, you know, the big name and, you know, wowzers for people, and I read their shit and I'm like, and? But no, this one was good. So I'll give this a 4.4 Warriors out of 5. I really did enjoy this. And since it's still dealing, we're still dealing with that whole Earth has been seeded with weird shit, that's going to probably continue on for a good while, you know, because they made no breakthroughs in this issue. It was more like, well, let's see how wow, this shit just went all over the place, didn't it?
Kind of like, oh, what happened while we were away?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you know? This shit.
So, yeah, I recommend it. Go get it.
Cool. Well, that will round up all of our reviews for this episode.
Holy crap, is our first show over already?
Our first show with me as host over. Here's hoping it didn't suck too bad. I think that will close this out. And if you guys have anything else you need to add, I don't think we've done plugs in a while. You guys got any new shows, books, stores, anything that you want to plug or shout out?
I will miss Young Justice. Give a rat's ass about Green Lantern, the animated series, but I will miss...
Just throwing that in there Justice. From the Distinguished Competition. I'm highly upset, too, but conversation for another day.
And to that effect, I still miss Avengers, Earth Mightiest Heroes.
Me, too.
I wish we had been able to do an episode about that show ending, but we didn't. Regardless, I know you were watching Ultimate Spider-Man. How's that turned out?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, I watched two episodes of that garbage and then I stopped.
Oh, okay. Well, then that kind of tells that story.
No thanks. Not for me.
I...
Give it a go if that's your thing. It's just not for me.
My God.
Ryan, you got anything?
Well, you could always come talk to us direct over at the Green Lantern Corps message boards. That's www.thegreenlanterncorps.com. I believe, Arnold, you said we had a new Gmail account.
Yes, we do have a new Gmail account. It is TW3. That's the number 3. So letter T, the letter W, and the number 3 podcast@gmail.com. Send us questions, comments, concerns, jokes at Taser or Brian's age. Anything is fine.
Anything under 13, because that's perfect for me.
Yep, that's good. Send us some love. Send us some hate. Send us something.
Give us all your hate.
Indeed. Yeah, you can also catch us on our webpage at wordpress.com/thewarriors3.
And nude pictures of your sister, if you've got them. Yes, you want those too.
If you got them. And on that note, folks, I will say, or we rather, will say good evening.
Later.
The dawn of a new era, folks.